Chapter 1. Montop. Hear my voice, great spirits, for I am as a son. Silence. Linto strained his neck to cast his vision directly upward on a spectacular spring morning. The sky was remarkably clear, and only the call of a white-throated sparrow dared to intrude upon his solitude. According to the English calendar, the month was May, and the year was 1671. Linto prayed in Montop, and was a brisk walk away from Swansea, in Plymouth Colony. What an odd name for a place, Swansea. Although Linto's English was improving with each passing year, most things about their tongue continued to strike him as odd. Swansea. Swansea. He was told there was another Swansea across the ocean. Once, at a missionary service, he asked if there was a sea of swans there, and the English ladies laughed until he blushed. Linto knelt on the cool ground of the forest and communed with the Great Spirit. There was so much to be thankful for. He was strong, healthy, and a good provider for his people. The waters continued to teem with abundant fish, and the crops had been planted. Although the winter was brutal, most among the Wampanoag had survived. And Linto, who had survived 22 winters, was in love. Yet so much troubled Linto, and he constantly sought guidance from the Great Spirit. The Great Spirit itself caused him endless speculation and wonder. The Algonquin people called it Kitchi Manitou, but also cautioned about Wendigo, the demonic spirit. Could the English be corrupted by Wendigo? Could that explain their behavior? The Abenaki, who were once Linto's people, warned of Pamola, a fierce monster who lived on a mountain. And his adopted people, the Wampanoag, spoke of the giant Moshup, who created the land, taught the people how to survive, and continued to influence their lives and destinies. But why would the Great Spirit tolerate so much sadness and disease? Were the people being punished? Had his ancestors betrayed the Great Spirit by embracing the strange English from across the sea? Why were the English possessed of such remarkable things, like enormous boats, knives of steel, and cooking pots that seemingly last forever? His people had an insatiable appetite for these wonders of the English, especially the alcohol and the deadly, cruel guns. Governor Thomas Prentice was an astounding 70 years old. He had migrated to the New World a year after the Mayflower, and he naturally exuded a remarkable aura of history, dignity, and authority. His legacy as governor was well established. With regard to accusations and trials for witchcraft, his reputation was one of fairness and justice. During the Quaker crisis of recent decades, he performed admirably in ensuring their pernicious influence was adequately repressed. Under his guidance, the General Court enacted a death penalty for exiled Quakers who returned, but much to Barron's disappointment, it was never enforced. Prentice's policies regarding the savages, however, proved to be a constant disappointment to Barron. Missionaries to the Indians described the governor as kind and gentle in his policies. Even more disillusioning, Governor Prentice presided over a 7-year moratorium on the sale of Indian lands to the colonists, a policy Barron and his allies found to be unproductive and misguided. And Barron certainly did have allies, and he cast a knowing glance at the assistant governor. Assistant Governor Josiah Winslow cut a splendid figure. His dark blue doublet was magnificently accentuated with snow-white cuffs and a rough collar. His intense brown eyes returned Barron's glance and acknowledged their like minds. Winslow was a tremendous presence in the room and a tremendous presence in the government. At age 43, Winslow was only 1 year older than Barron, but unlike the Treasurer, Winslow appeared to be the picture of health and vitality. As a previous commander of Plymouth's military forces, and as a commissioner to the United Colonies of New England, the military alliance to repel and deter the heathens, he was assumed to be a certain successor to the geriatric Prentice. With minimal fanfare, Governor Prentice called the special session to order.